Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us on the Investec FinTech podcast. My name is Lyndon Sebroyne. I'm the Global Head of Digital for Investec, and I'm joined today by Devin Coley, who's our co-head of the Investec Emerging Companies team here in the UK, as well as a very special guest, Norris Koppel, who is the founder and CEO of Moneyz, an organization that we've had a three-year relationship with and have started to form quite a strong partnership with. Today we're going to be discussing the UK fintech ecosystem, and particularly collaboration between banks and fintechs. We're also going to get a view on the regulatory environment and what's allowed this growth in the UK. And we're particularly interested to get to know about Norris and his story and how he has built the organization that he has and what's prompted him to try and solve this problem. So guys, thank you for joining me today.
Hi.
Hi there.
Okay, so let's kick off with a question for both of you. Devin and Norris, what does the fintech ecosystem look like in the UK at the moment?
I think at the moment it's come along, it's transformed quite significantly from what it was. I think it started as a disruptor to remittance as an early doors into 2010-11, and you had the rise of TransferWise and others. But I think it's transformed more to look at, you know, beyond that, payment technology with bank accounts, with open banking. It's moved on, and the ecosystem's now covering insurance tech, and the definition of financial technology, I think, has broadened significantly over the last 5-6 years, helped by regulation, by government, by funding, by innovators above all, and people like Norris.
Yeah, it's supported. I think UK is incredibly active when it comes to fintech and now banking and so on. You know, from the startup perspective, I think UK is definitely the best place to be. As a startup, financial services startup, and you know, the amount of investors, similar thinking individuals and founders, it's I don't think that you can really find this anywhere else in on the planet, really.
So, Norris, other than funding, what do you think is prompting this kind of hotbed of talent? Do you think there are particular problems that are being surfaced in the UK, or do you think it's the regulatory environment? Do you think it is just the fallout from 2008 that was felt so severely in the UK? What in your mind is one of the triggers for it?
I think UK has always been a leader in financial services, and it's only natural that here in the UK, new evolution and revolution is starting. And of course, with the support of FCA, which is very open, and I understand it's most forward-looking regulator in the world right now. This is I think this is a natural place for fintech innovation to start.
I think the geography of the UK aside, you've got huge amount of human capital in one square mile. You've got insurance companies, forward-looking regulators, Norris says, with the sandbox and other things. You've got a plethora of insurance companies as well as service companies like lawyers and accountants all together. And I think that's what makes it a very, very positive environment. And then you compound that with all the funding that's been able to attract, and that's due to probably the capital market strength, private and public, of the UK.
And all the banks are here, of course.
Yes, I mean, above all, I guess.
And you can, within 15 minutes walking radius, you can reach pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, speaking about the investor landscape, Devin, you've recently set up, along with your team, the Investec Emerging Companies team, which is focused on investing into these fintech companies. Mm-hmm. What in particular are you looking for with this? The growth in the number of fintechs in the city is probably more than you can handle at the moment. What is it that you're looking for when you meet companies?
Yeah, so we look at investing at early stage, so late seed onwards, and we focus on fintech and enterprise software. And at the moment, you know, you're right, the number of companies emerging is quite vast. We're seeing about 60 to 70 new companies a month that we're interacting with. So how do you manage all of that? How do you then think through who to look for? I think in the last 4 or 5 years, you've seen fintechs start with disrupting banks, and traditional services are now looking increasingly to partner and collaborate. And so within that, you've got to think about, from an investment perspective, who's solving a problem which has got a big enough addressable market. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first thing. Who's backable from a founder perspective, I think, in terms of the individuals themselves, the experience and their I think philosophy on what they're trying to achieve. And I think the third biggest point is, which increasingly we're seeing money dragged or zeroing in on, is user economics. It's all very well having a big enough addressable market. Have you got a business plan and a monetization plan to actually make money ultimately in the space? There's been a lot of noise about disruption and innovation, but can you yourself, as a fintech disrupting a multi-billion pound bank, can you try and create something yourself which will hopefully make millions at profit level? I think that's where you've got to be quite tough, I guess, and quite filtering in your process about who's going to actually succeed and who's not.
Okay. So you've touched on fintech companies shifting from just being pure competitors and trying to solve a problem in the market to now looking at much more collaboration. Norris, this hasn't been a journey that my knees has gone down. You've been able to create real value without having to tap into the banks for partnerships. Is it something you see yourself going down, a path that you see yourself going down in terms of collaborating with banks, or do you think that the problem you're trying to solve is not something they would ever look to join you in?
Monish was very much is very much built on actually bank partnerships and the relationships. So what we try to do is pretty big. So in order to reach that scale, you can't do this alone. So Monish very much will see itself working with banks and other financial institutions across the world in order to provide a good experience to end users, of course. So we have some relationships and partnerships already ongoing, but as we go and grow, we're looking to establish more and more relationships. And this comes to not just providing platform and infrastructure and access to payment facilities in some jurisdictions. It also comes down to offering credit, all the other financial services that customers expect. And it's still a long journey ahead of us, but we right now already have formed a meaningful amount of bank partnerships.
Okay, so you know, when I hear most people talk about collaboration between fintechs and banks, most people tend to describe it as collaboration for the purposes of distribution and sales. So partnering with the banks in order to distribute your products and services. And actually what you're highlighting is that none of the fintech success would have been possible without partnering through the infrastructure and platform layer anyway. So it's something that has been happening for a long time and will continue to happen. So the error that most people, myself included, keep making is when we think about collaboration, we always default to collaborating for the purposes of distribution of a fintech's product into the client base. So thanks for clearing that up for us. So Norris, we've heard about some of the challenges that come with Brexit in the UK, some of the funding challenges that Devon has raised for early stage companies. We've also heard about some of the challenges around talent. What else do you see as a challenge that fintech companies will face in the near future?
I think one of the key differentiators is the fact that in this very highly regulated environment, you have to put in a lot of time and work and money into building your product, acquire licenses, get your team together, and actually almost you have to finalize a product before you can actually release it and test it with actual human beings. Because if you're playing with customers' money, incredibly important not to lose that money, for sure. Second aspect is also because you're working in a regulated environment, it's incredibly important that criminal money doesn't enter the system. You're not subject to money laundering and terrorists and everyone else trying to take advantage of your systems. So I would say it's incredibly hard to spend half a year, year, 2 years, 3 years in a garage building your product and burning money before you can actually test out whether your ideas and your approach actually works. And we have seen quite few failures in this space. People have just ran out of money before they can actually release something and test the product. So I would say that's one of the biggest hurdles. And really, you can be as tech heavy and tech focused as you like, but if you can't test your product with actual human beings, then you know it's much more challenging to launch something in financial sector compared to, let's say, some sort of other building another technology company where you can test almost immediately. You can build your MVP incredibly fast, release it, test it, and see what works, what doesn't. This rule doesn't apply when you're building the fintech.
And I think on the funding point, we've got some interesting numbers that our teams put together, which we've seen that despite Brexit, and I think everyone's concerned about what we may or may not end up with in a year or two's time, but you know, in the 12 months before Brexit, you know, the UK had about 500 million of fintech funding. In the year after that, it was 620. In the 2 years after the year just closing to June 2018, so 2 years after Brexit, it's been 1.5 billion. So you can see, despite the concerns politically, there's been nearly a tripling of funding in for fintech startups. And I think it's also been far more discerning in the sense that, you know, over 75% of that has gone to 10 to 15 companies. So it's now it's much more focused on the businesses which are starting to emerge as real high growth technology unicorns potentially in the coming years, already unicorns.
Would you say that the funding has as an early stage company, it's a little bit trickier now to raise funding?
I think post the love, I mean, there's, in the UK we have very nice tax regulations around the initial £1 million or so that a company can raise. So what's deemed as, we call it love money, of family and friends. So once that's over and before you get to the sort of larger check sizes of 15, 20 million plus from the larger venture capital companies, that gap between is, I think, a challenge where there's more demand for capital than there is supply, and there's also a lack of quality investors. You know, that's an area we're looking at to invest in. That's what we've done, for example, with you at Monet's. But I think that, you know, we do see that as an opportunity, but I do think that is ultimately also a weakness for the system, that there needs to be more guys coming in probably a little earlier from a fund perspective, not relying on angel money.
So do you think that sort of concentration will result in some maybe intended or unintended consequences, like the market starting to shrink, or some kind of merger acquisition activity starting to take place? And as you're saying, if we don't see more of the competition start to come up, this could feel like a bubble that has burst.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit more forensic now on the on numbers. And I think that, you know, I don't know, there must be at least 20 perceived challenger banks in the UK that have sprung up. I mean, I challenge whether there'll be 20 in 3 or 4 years' time.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them, sadly, may fall by the wayside or get consolidated into, but and some not necessarily for the right reasons, because they just simply don't have the cash to sustain their acquisition costs. On the other hand, I think their businesses that are growing very quickly and are starting to generate really positive user economics are arguably a threat to the larger banks, and that's where there's positive, I think, consolidation happening, where the much larger bold bracket or big players would like to get into new segments and look at opportunities to acquire large user bases.
So, Devin, alongside what you're describing as an impact to the sector and potentially large-scale acquisition by the traditional banks and large players in the market, what do you think some of the other direct impacts will be on traditional banking services as a result of this fintech growth?
I think it would be more platform-based, and I think that's banks will specialise on areas, and where there's areas that they don't touch or they don't necessarily have a specialty in, whether through acquisition or through integration, they will offer that service on the platform. And I think that is mutually beneficial to fintech and bank, because it holds the customer ultimately for the bank in their arena, though it makes platforms far more important. So there'll be subsectors of specialty. And I think that's, to me, going to be a big play out over the next few years, and I think it's being driven also by regulation, whether it's open banking and some of the GDPR and PSD2 rules that are coming in across Europe, which Brexit or no Brexit the UK will adopt. I think that will be, to me, the biggest driver, platform-based banking.
So, Norris, maybe a question for you. We've heard a potential concern around Brexit. We've heard a potential concern around the financial constraints for new companies entering the market. What do you think some of the other challenges are that fintechs will face in the next few years in this market?
I think the biggest problem actually is getting attention from the consumer. I think it's the biggest challenge because if you don't get enough attention, if you have to spend tons of money to acquire these customers, and the customers are then going to leave you and so on, then it's difficult to gain traction this way. So I think the biggest thing that you can do as a company is just to work relentlessly on getting customers laugh and get them on board, make sure that they talk about you to their friend and bring new friends, and then retain those customers. And you can only do this if you truly provide 10 times better value compared to what a customer can get from another bank or another service provider. So I think that's definitely one of the challenge. And now the second challenge, I think what Devin also briefly talked about, was the access to capital as well. So I think right now, especially younger firms who are trying to enter this very crowded, let's call it very crowded fintech space, I think the opportunities are smaller. And it's trickier to get attention. So we started as a Monisa. We started right at a great time when everything was sort of heating up. And right now, along with other companies, we are kind of on top of this fintech wave right now. But I'm not sure how far, if the other guys are coming after us, what the wave is going to do to them, basically. So.
And in the wave, I think generally for all financial services companies, whether you're a fintech or a big bank, it's staying relevant to your client base. And I think, how do you do that in a very increasingly competitive and platform-based banking style? How do you stay relevant? So looking at that through the lens of fintech is important. So someone like Norris, like 80%, am I right, it's up to 80% of people pay their salary into their Monese account. So it's highly relevant for them. So you think about, For whether it's for us at Investec or for challenger banks in the UK, how do they maintain that level of stickiness and relevance with their users? And I think that's really difficult. It's really difficult to maintain that.
And how do you come up with something that truly is genuinely is different? Because right now, when as a customer, when you look at the big four, big five UK banks, they all look pretty much the same, right? I mean, costs are the same and so on. So how does this new innovators come out and say, we're doing something quite unique, we're doing something different, and we are not providing exactly the same service as everyone else? I mean, ultimately, customers will vote with their feet. Basically, winning customers and retaining those customers is one of the biggest challenges.
I'm going to ask both of you what may feel like an awkward question. Norris, what makes you continue working with Investec, with Devin and his team? What value are they adding that you find so unique that you're continuing this partnership?
To be 100% fair, I think I came in with fairly low expectations.
that I over-delivered.
But what I've now learned over the past 3 years working with Devin, it's very clear that Devin is incredibly passionate about the industry and ensuring that Investec Bank is able to collaborate with guys like us, invest into fintech businesses and basically be one of the most innovative banks. Let's call it UK.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been pleasantly surprised. Basically, is the amount of communication and thinking with me and support that I think Monisis has been getting from Devin and his team. It's actually enormous, and I didn't expect it as this at all.
It's great. It sounds like a real partnership.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
I'd echo the other way that, when we first backed Norris, we believed in the concept, we believed in him and his team, but what they've achieved over the last few years has exceeded all of our expectations in terms of being able to do that. And you know, I think that goes testimony to their, as I said, their laser focus, and also to, I think, our ability to continue to back him is based on his performance. So now that we're at a level where the business is, you know, growing 20% month on month, its revenue numbers are improving every day, and you're looking at a margin, and you're like, from where we were 2 years ago to where we are now is remarkable, truly remarkable. So I think that's a testimony to the team. So it's dedication. And I know there's been a lot of late nights and a lot of sacrifices made along the way, but I'm sure it'll be worth it in the end.
Devin, we've heard a few times that the emerging companies teams, and you in particular, work with Monese. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
So I think the partnership between Investec and Monese is I think multifaceted. So I think we started off with an investment in Monese, and that's grown over time, and we've backed Monese over 2-3 rounds of funding, and that, you know, is an equity support for the company. I think as the business has grown, we've seen how we can assist Monese in other ways. We're discussing obviously particular partnerships on the digital side, but over and beyond that, it's also seeing how we can help them from the advisory perspective as well. I think Norris and I have got a very good relationship. We speak more than probably his wife and my partner probably want in terms of like chatting away on various things. But in terms of the advisory perspective and helping get further partnerships and funders into the business as it continues to grow. And I think that's testimony to also like what we're trying to do in the emerging companies business, which is invest and advise fintech entrepreneurs as they grow their businesses. And we do this, you know, in the UK, and we focus particularly on, I say, the late seed stage. But we don't just do this in the UK. We do this in China, in India, in Australia, in Southern Africa, where we really are trying to become relevant and I think a partner to a lot of the fintech and wider technology entrepreneurs.
Thank you everybody for joining us. That was Norris Koppel, who's the founder and CEO of Monese, and Devin Coley, our co-founder of the Investec Emerging Companies team here in the UK. It was a pleasure having you both on. With all of the changes happening in our ecosystem, I'm looking forward to the impact that both Monese and Investec will have in this landscape. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Lyndon Sebroin, signing off.
The views expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm and should not be taken as advice or recommendation. Investec Specialist Bank, a division of Investec Bank Limited, is a registered credit provider.